Therefore, Allah made His prophets strong in faith, firm in their convictions, and brave to face any kind of ordeal. But at the same time, to all appearances, they looked poor, meek, humble, and helpless. And yet, they were satisfied at their lot, and happy at the worst stage of the trials they passed through. Their contentment, their courage, their brave humility, and their determination not to seek help of wicked people earned for them respect and veneration of those who saw and heard them. Their privation and distress were often painful to behold, yet no one could but admire their firmness and bravery. Had the prophets been endowed with such strength, power, and might that no one could dare ill-treat and harm them, or try to suppress them, they had been emperors of such mighty empires that their sway and influence would have brought people down to their knees before them. Then one and all would have tried their best to support such empires, and such conditions would have proved very favorable for propagation of any doctrine. Refusal to accept the ideology of mighty persons or empires would have proved impossible, because there could not be free choice and free will to accept or reject the teachings preached from any pulpit supported by a crown and an empire. Fear of suppression, tyranny, and torture to some, and desire to gain riches and favors to others, would have brought people in large numbers to the fold of the religion, which could afford backing of a powerful government or of a monarch. Under those circumstances, acceptance of faith would not be an act of sincere obedience to the orders of Allah. And the Lord wanted people to accept His prophets, to testify His books, and to obey His commands of their own free will, only for His sake and not with ulterior and base motives or through fear. The harder the trial in his way, the nobler and greater is the reward. Do you not see that the Lord, since Adam to his day, has tested and tried every nation, those which have passed and those which you find around you with stones, idols? Such were those idols that can neither see nor hear, and can neither do any harm nor any good. And out of similar stones he got a house built and dedicated to himself, which he ordered to be a place of peace and safety to mankind, Kaaba in Makkah. There are two important points worth remembering about this house of Allah. The first is that Muslims must remember that Kaaba is a house dedicated to Allah and not Allah itself. Second is that the place where this shrine is lodged is destined to be a rocky highland in the midst of a desert. It has little or no fertile soil. It is a narrow valley surrounded by bare and rough hillocks filled with soft sand, which the furious winds subject to quick changes. It has some water holes, but they are few and far between. There are a few hamlets scattered over the valley, where birds and beasts have scanty chance of flourishing. He, having placed Kaaba in such a dry and desolate place as a test, ordered Adam and his children to turn their faces towards it while offering prayers, and to come to its pilgrimage. Thus it became a religious center for them. They come to it from distant lands, far off valleys and islands. They cross deserts, mountains, valleys, rivers, and seas to reach it. And when once they reach there, they obediently and sincerely carry on the various rites of the pilgrimage with full zeal, going round the Kaaba, glorifying His name loudly and declaring that they are there in obedience to His call, and with shriveled hair, with dusty faces, and with garments on their backs. They run from place to place in this valley. This is a severe test and a hard trial to measure one's sincerity of faith. Allah has made it the means of achieving His blessings and securing paradise. If Allah had so willed, He would have given location to His sacred house, Kaaba, and to so many other shrines dedicated to Him in the midst of green valleys, or places surrounded by gardens and beautiful parks with streams and rivulets flowing through them, orchards overgrown with fruit-bearing trees, field after field of rich harvest of fine wheat and other food grains, and prosperous cities with abundance of palatial buildings and networks of good roads, thus providing every facility of transport, stay, pleasure and ease suitable for pleasure resorts. Then the anxieties, worries and troubles of pilgrimage would have very much lessened. The pilgrimage would have been converted into a pleasure trip, and the divine reward would also have been reduced in the same proportion. If the Lord Almighty had His house Kaaba constructed of priceless diamonds, lovely green emeralds, blood-red rubies and other precious stones reflecting light and giving glorious shines, the sight might perhaps have awed minds of the people, and perhaps Satan then might not have so well succeeded in insinuating people against the apparent humbleness and dissoluteness of the place and difficulties of travel. But the Lord wants to test the qualities of faith and sincerity of His creatures through hardships and sufferings. He wants to test and see how they bear troubles and sufferings in obedience to His commands, how happily they offer their prayers and thanks in the midst of troubles and worries, adversities and reverses, or distress and disappointments, so that their minds may be cleared of pride and vanity, as well as arrogance and self-conceit, and through meekness, humility, faith and sincerity, they may gain His blessings and may secure His paradise. Fear the wrath of Allah, which certainly is the effect of insubordination and disobedience to His orders, the result of arrogance and vanity against Him, and the consequence of tyranny and compulsion on other human beings. Remember that vanity and conceit are the strongest snare of Satan and its most subtle stratagem against you. It is the deadliest poison and such an arrow that it never misses its target. No one can be safe from it. The most learned men, in spite of their knowledge and learning, and the poorest beggars, despite their tattered clothes and humble ways of life, are apt to fall a prey to these weapons of Satan. Allah protects His loyal and obedient creatures with the help of Salat, daily prayers, Psalm, fastings, Zakat, religious tax, and Jihad, holy wars. Thus, He bestows peace to their heart, comfort to their bodies, and humility and meekness to their minds. During prayers, you prostrate yourself before Allah. Your heads are on the ground. Thus, humbleness and submission is acquired by the mind in place of vanity and conceit. While fasting, you willingly and in obedience to the orders of Allah suffer the pangs of hunger and thirst. You may learn to feel what hunger and want is. In payment of zakat, you distribute yields of the land and money amongst the poor and destitute, and thus you in some extent alleviate their poverty and may come in contact with them. Try to realize how obedience to carry out these forms of devotions reforms your intellects, how it removes pride, vanity, conceit and haughtiness from your minds and replaces them with humility, meekness and fellow feeling with other human beings. I searched human intellect and did not find a single person who defends the cause of adheres to a principle without having a motive or a reason for it. But you appear to be an exception to the rule. You are vain about something and are in its favor without any reason and cause. How silly you are. Even Satan had a reason behind his action. It had prejudice against Adam because of its vanity. Its conceit made it believe that it was superior to Adam in origin. It taunted Adam, saying, "You are created out of the dust of the earth, and I am created out of fire." Similarly, devils, minions, rich and important people of great and powerful nations, boast in the height of their vanity about their status. They often say, "Who or what can harm us? We possess so much wealth, and we have so many supporters. We are invincible. Even the wrath of Allah cannot reach us." Thus, Satan and his lordings have reasons, false and superstitious though they may be, of birth, wealth, and majority. But what reasons have you? None. If you at all want to be prejudiced against something, then develop pride and prejudice in favor of acquiring exemplary character, high moral values, and ideal qualities, as was the custom among the noble Arab clans of the past. They used to pride themselves upon their deeds of bravery and chivalry, their high character, noble qualities, and superior wisdom. You also try to develop sublime qualities in you. Help and defend your neighbors. Fulfill your promises. Follow the example of virtuous people. Refrain from the ways of arrogant and vain persons. Develop nobility of character. Abstain from tyranny and suppression. Avoid shedding human blood. Adhere to the principles of equity and justice in your dealings with the creatures of Allah. Have complete control over your temper and desist from vice, wickedness, and depravity. Be afraid of the wrath of Allah, which fell upon the past nations owing to their vices and sins. Scrutinize your deeds, good or bad, and take warning from the fate of those who have passed before you. Take care that you may not follow the wicked persons and may not suffer the same doom as was theirs. When you carefully ponder over the histories of the past nations, follow the ways which brought them honor and glory, which kept their enemies away from them, which produced prosperity and peace for them, which carried blessings of the Lord in their wake, and which enhanced their respect, veneration, and reverence among their contemporaries. Do you know what were the qualities which brought all the above blessings to people gone before you? They avoided dissension, were united among themselves, and persuaded each other to follow the same course. Follow these habits and avoid the other ones which broke the back of those who were addicted to them and converted their power into weakness. Those qualities were dissension and hypocrisy. They hated and bore malice against one another and refused mutual help and cooperation to one another. The consequence of such ways of life were obvious. In the same way, study the conditions through which loyal and sincere Muslims passed their lives before you. They went through dreadful sufferings and terrible hardships. Their afflictions were greater than those of other people. The world was harsher to them than to others. Men of power and position, pharaohs of their times, were treating them more scornfully than they treated the slaves, and were forcing them to undergo appalling ordeals. The despots were united against them. Lives of those faithful Muslims were a series of hardships and troubles, one worse than the other. they had been brought to the verge of terrible humiliation, followed by ruination and death. They apparently had nobody to help them, and there was no way to come out of those calamities. Then the merciful Allah came to their help, as He was aware of their sincerity, how loyal they were and their loyalty to Him, how faithful to His religion, how courageous to bear the result of their convictions, how patient to endure afflictions, and how brave to face dreadful ordeals. He provided for them ways to come out of those frightfully alarming situations. He changed their humiliation into honor and might, and their degrading and dangerous surrounding into a prosperous, peaceful state. Thus they achieved worldly power and religious leadership and received His blessings for more than they had even dreamt of. Now carefully consider this case once again. When those people were united and had enmity among themselves, when their minds acted in perfect unison, when their hearts and hands supported each other, when their swords were used for common cause and mutual defense, and when their foresight was perfect and their decisions were unanimous, what was their condition? Had they not acquired a sway over the land? Had they not suppressed and subjugated their enemies? The other side of this picture is also instructive and interesting. What happened to these very people when enmity, cooperation, and love gave place to animosity, dissension, and mutual hatred? Their hearts as well as their tongues lost the unison. They were divided into various factions and groups, and they started slandering each other and fighting against one another. The result was that Allah humiliated and disgraced them. All the honor, the power, and the prosperity which had been granted to them was taken back from them. And the causes of their rise and fall were written in history for you to take warning and lesson from them. Turn to another chapter of history and study the records of the children of Israel. Their conditions were similar to those of early Muslims. Just look what happened to them when they gave up mutual support, unity, and cooperation. They were run over by the Persians from one side and then by the Romans from the other. These conquerors drove them away from their fertile lands and from the Euphrates, plains to the lands of thorny shrubs, dusty valleys, and regions where little could be acquired from land, and that too with great difficulty, till they became poor and destitute. The only profession left to them was to look after the starving and the diseased, and the only dwellings which came to their lot were tents of camel hairs. Their big and prosperous cities and their beautiful houses were taken away from them. Their habitations were tattered tents, overcrowded and filthy, and their lands were dry and overrun by droughts. Nobody cared to hear their grievance, nor came to their help, and no one dared to sympathize with them. Even in this condition, they were disunited. Their populace was divided into groups and factions. Their sufferings were horrible, and their ignorance deplorable. They used to bury their newborn daughters so that they might not be taken away by the conquerors. They had in envy home and idol to worship. They had broken family ties and forsaken mutual help. Their only desire was to exploit others. Do you know from what height they had fallen so low? But the merciful Lord favored them once again. He sent His chosen prophet among them and gathered them at one center. Prosperity returned to them. Bounties and blessings greeted them, and Islamic laws opened the doors of peace and plenty for them. Fortune overwhelming favored them with abundance and affluence. They were passing their lives under the grace of His blessings and under the benign rule of a powerful and just ruler, the Holy Prophet of Islam, peace of Allah be upon him and his descendants, who organized various aspects of civilization and culture. They were made to improve their ways and to educate themselves to better standards of living and higher values of morality till they commanded respect and veneration. A powerful empire came under their sway. It made them rule over those who had once ruled over them and placed them in a position to inflict indignities upon those who had once subjected them to extreme humiliation. Take an account of yourself and see how you have drifted away towards insubordination and disobedience, and how you have allowed pre-Islamic ways to break through the fortification raised around your society and culture by Islamic traditions. Remember that the merciful Lord has, in the form of Islam, bestowed upon humanity such a favor and such a blessing that none amongst His creatures can form a true estimate of its value and utility. This blessing is more useful to mankind than anything which could be imagined, and more honorable than anything which could be fancied. Take heed that after once discarding paganism and infidelity, you are drifting back to it surreptitiously, having once united into mutual Islamic brotherhood. You are unwillingly developing the old clannish spirit and are dividing yourselves into factions and groups. Your connection with Islam is merely for the sake of name. Your faith in religion and the Holy Prophet is lip religion, and your prayers are lip worship. You do not know anything better than that. You say that you would prefer hell to disgrace. I do not know what you mean by that. Do you prefer humiliation of Islam to your personal disgrace? So you want to break your promise with Allah and let Islam be dashed to the ground, undefended and unhelped? Is Islam the covenant and the religion which the merciful Allah has meant to be the harbinger of peace and protection to suffering humanity to be treated thus? Remember that if you desert and forsake Islam and enter any other fold, the unbelievers will fight against you. Then neither the angels, nor the muhajirs, the Meccan immigrants, nor the Ansar, the Madinite helpers, will come to your help. You will have to defend yourself alone till Allah passes His judgment about your deeds, and till His wrath in the form of severe calamities, utter humiliation, harsh punishment, and total annihilation of your culture and society descends upon you. Do not underestimate His wrath. Do not belittle His displeasure. Examples of His wrath are before you. Take a lesson from them, and do not disparage His power to punish you. Do not ignore His hold, and do not take His punishment lightly. Do you know why Allah has punished other nations? It was because they gave up enjoining others to do good deeds and prohibiting them from indulging in vice and sin. He punishes both the wise and the fool for their sins of commission and omission. Take warning that you have violated the commands of Allah. You have transgressed the principles of Islam, and you have broken the bonds set by Allah. Beware that Lord had ordained me to carry on jihad against those who rebel against Islam, who have broken the oath of allegiance, and who propagate vice, corruption, and depravity. Thus I fought against those who had broken the oath of allegiance to me, the battle of Jamal. Then against the heretics and dissidents, the battle of Siffin. Lastly, I crushed those who had rebelled against Islam and had gone out of the religion, battle of Nahram. They had to be disgraced and humiliated. During that battle, Nahram, Allah's wrath descended upon that devil's incarnate, Zuthubair, in the form of thunderbolt from the sky. He might have anticipated it, for I could hear the beating of his heart and the shivering of his bones. I had not to kill him because the bolt from the sky did that for me. Now some of those heretics and dissidents are still going free, openly carrying on with their vices and sins. If Allah allows me to fight once more against them, I shall punish them and bring their sway to an end. I shall change the direction and form of the government, basing it on the principles of equity and justice. And then only those apostates and renegades who have scattered to the outer limits of the Muslim state will escape my clutches. I have been fighting these enemies of Allah from my very youth. I have defeated and killed many of their generals and marshals. I have disgraced many of their brave knights in the battlefields. I humiliated the pride of the famous clans of Rabia and Muzar. Do you know that owing to my kinship and on account of my worth and merit, what my relations with the Holy Prophet, peace of Allah be upon him and his descendants, were? From the very beginning of my life, he loved me and I loved him. He took me in his lap when I was an infant, and thenceforward I was always with him. He often kept me embraced. He used to make me sleep next to him. We used to be so close to each other that I felt the warmth and smelt the aroms of his body. When I was a child, he fed me with his hands, often chewing hard bits for me. He never found me lying, nor weak and wavering. From the time of his infancy, Allah had appointed the Holy Ghost to be always with him, and this archangel was leading him towards exemplary qualities and high moral values. And I followed the Holy Prophet step by step as a baby camel follows its mother. Daily he used to place before me a fresh standard of efficiency and used to order me to follow it. Every year he used to stay in a grotto of Mount Hira for some time, and nobody used to be with him but I. No one could then see or hear or be near by him but I. During those days, Islam was the religion of only the Prophet and his wife, Lady Khadija. I was the third of the trio, the Holy Prophet, Lady Khadija, and Imam Ali himself. Nobody else in this world had embraced Islam. I even then used to see the divine light of revelation and smell the divine fragrance of prophethood. When the Holy Prophet received the first revelation, Satan lamented loudly. I asked the Holy Prophet, "Who is lamenting and why?" He replied, "It is Satan, who had given up hopes of acquiring complete sway over human mind. In this disappointment, he's lamenting over the chance lost. Verily, Ali, you also hear whatever is revealed to me, and you also see whatever is being shown to me. The difference only is that you are not entrusted with prophethood, but you will be my successor, helper, and vicegerent, and you will always uphold truth and
and justice. I was with the Holy Prophet when the chieftains of the clans of Quraysh came to see him. They said to him, O Muhammad, you claim to be a prophet, and it is a serious and grave claim. None of your forefathers, nor any member of your family, ever declared himself to be a prophet. We ask of you of one thing, and if you fulfill our demand, we will accept you as his prophet and messenger. If not, we will take you to be a pretender and a liar. The prophet asked them to put forward their demand. They said that they wanted him to summon the tree, which was at some distance from the Holy Prophet, to come and to stand near him. He replied that Allah has the power and might to do what he desires. But whether they would embrace Islam if their request was granted? They said that they would willingly embrace Islam. Thereupon the Holy Prophet replied, I shall perform the miracle as you have desired, but I know that you even then will not accept me as a prophet and will not adopt Islam as your religion, because in your group there are a few persons like Abu Jahl and Utbah bin Walid, etc.